Hello and welcome to another episode of FinTech Stories, a WiseThings podcast which explores the latest legal and regulatory developments, trends, and hot topics in the FinTech sector from across the globe. I'm Miroslav Juric, Senior Associate in our Financial Services Regulatory Practice based in our Frankfurt office, and in today's episode we will have a look at the topic of open finance and the EU Commission's legislative proposal on the financial data access regulation that should create the very first legal framework on open finance. I'm pleased to be joined today by Wolfram Stackley, CTO and co-founder of Wealth API, an API service provider based in Berlin that is active in open banking space by providing B2B2C API infrastructure that can be used for aggregation, exchange, and analysis of financial data across the board in the financial services sector. Wolfram, welcome to our show.
Yeah, thanks, Miroslav. Thank you so much for having me here today.
So let's start this a very interesting topic with some basics. For those less familiar with it, open finance is a concept that builds on the lessons learned from the open banking framework introduced by PSD2 that shall effectively enable individuals and businesses access, sharing, and control of their financial data. This framework is intended to go beyond the scope of PSD2 and the data related to payment accounts, basically aiming to cover a wide range of financial products and services, including data related to savings account, investments, pensions, mortgages, insurance policies, and various other financial services contracts. The main idea behind the proposal is to enable consumers secure and standardized access to their financial data so that they can basically become able to take the data with them when switching across various financial service providers in order to eventually receive better offers, automated financial planning options, and in the end of the day, more personalized service and product offering. With this in mind, in June 2023, the EU Commission has proposed a regulation on financial data access, commonly known as FIDA regulation, which aims to create the very first framework on open finance. This will practically create the framework for controlled and consent-based sharing of financial data in which customers have control over their financial data and the opportunity to benefit from open, fair, and safe data-driven innovation in financial services. It will apply to a very long list of addressees, key players in the financial services sector, ranging from banks, investment firms, to payment institutions, fund managers, and also crypto asset service providers within the meaning of the new MiCA regulation. The proposal is currently finding its way through the EU legislative making process, going through the trilogues, and later in this episode, we will take a brief look at some most recent developments. But first, Wolfram, the Commission's plans with FIDA are big, promising, but I believe we all would like to better understand how this world of open finance should look like in practice. Can you elaborate a bit more on that?
Yeah, thanks. So it's a very interesting question here. Now, as you already stated, we from Wealth API, we are a B2B2C player. That means, you know, we always have quite often end customer focus. Yeah. So what we ask ourselves is those people finally using the services, how will they perceive them? And so I personally believe that one very important requirement how this new ecosystem should look like is it should be really convenient, because what we are doing with FIDA, we provide people access to their financial data. I mean, I personally believe we help them, you know, we give them access to data that belongs to them. So this is really something that people want. They want comparability. They want to track their assets. They want to know what they have, and they want to also know if they achieve their financial goals, their retirement goals. But overall, and this is probably really a key learning from the PSD2, is that we shouldn't restrict people from using services just because, you know, the usage kind of feels clumsy or the data they get is incomplete. So honestly, one of the core criteria shouldn't be, is it 100% complete? Does the scope encompass everything? It should really be, you know, how easy is it to use it? How accessible is this data? And I strongly believe, you know, us as fintechs and on the other side, the banks and of course the regulator would do very well in coming together and, you know, putting the customer first, switching perspective and really asking, what do those people out there want, and how can we make life convenient for them?
Okay, thanks, Wolfram. So this basically means that the entire open finance framework will be heavily dependent on the API infrastructure, like the one that you are providing, that will basically enable data exchange in accordance with the new rules. So how do you see the role of specialized API service providers like yourself in this new open finance world?
Yeah. So when we talk open finance, open banking, open wealth, that obviously means that all this data will flow via APIs. I think this is just a very fundamental requirement that all involved parties provide these interfaces. Now, the thing is that payment data is already complex, but that's even more true for financial data. So we have different domains. We have more the investing domain or the insurance domain. But if you look, for example, at an insurance contract, that thing tends to be very long, and there's a lot of details in there. That means it's super complex. And the same also is true in the investment domain. So when you look at a stock or a bond or a fund, there's a lot of things that can happen to it, right? There's capital measures. It can be split. It can be merged. It can be delisted. So we talk about a massive intrinsic complexity that we have there. And, you know, if we want to achieve our goal of getting transparency in there and making data really comparable, then we need to understand and handle this complexity. And that's where I personally see the role of these specialized API providers. So in PSD2, those providers often were, I would say, standardization entities, and they would provide a bit of data intelligence. With FIDA, I think these providers, you know, will equally provide access. And on the other hand, they also really need to provide all this wisdom, all this functionality to make sense out of this data, to really make it comparable. And yeah, so I think this role of the players in between will be even more important than before. And our role will be, you know, to, on the one side, of course, make it easy to connect to banks, but on the other side, really make it easy for players facing the end customers, make it easy for them to provide applications that then really, you know, have a deep customer focus and provide the use cases that people out there really want.
Okay, very interesting. So looking now on a bit on a different side of the spectrum, what do you see as the main incentive for financial institutions that will be the primary addressees of these new rules? What will be their main incentive to embrace this new framework? Many have stressed the operational and technical complexity of the entire open finance ecosystem, as well as potential impediments that may exist when it comes to proper implementations. In your opinion, are those concerns justified? And what is the added value that this framework, so a trade-off basically, will bring to financial institutions that will justify the implementation costs?
Yeah. So there's two things about implementation cost. And we are a member, for example, of the Berlin Group, of the Open Finance Alliance. And one thing that really drives implementation cost is regulation. So we probably really should look at which part of the regulation is really required and which part of the regulation we should leave up to the market, we should leave up to users and the banks, you know, to hammer out among them. So that would be one lever that we see in terms of implementation cost, you know, remove barriers, just keep things simple. Then on the other side, you asked about the benefit for institutions. And this is a bit of a more complex question. And to that, I would like to take one step back and, you know, again, take on end customer focus. And essentially, I really believe people want to have the data and people want this transparency. So currently, you know, there's us in Germany. There's other players like Flanks, for example, in Spain. So actually, we are doing FIDA without having FIDA. And we are serving hundreds of thousands of end customers. And that means, you know, on the market, there's already this massive demand to have free and open access to financial data. And I really believe that FIDA is merely following people. It's not setting, I mean, it's setting a standard in some kind, but it's not that it's idea establishing something entirely new. But, you know, FIDA is already here, but it's not standardized, but there's a lot of company doing all that already. So in that respect, you know, the regulation kind of really follows what people want. It's not that it does set the market, it rather follows the market. And we've seen the same, you know, with PSD2 back then. If you look at the leading players, they didn't emerge after PSD2, they emerged before PSD2, and PSD2 merely standardized what they were doing. And essentially, we're seeing the same for FIDA. Now, if you look at the financial market altogether, you know, I believe we've seen platformization in a lot of areas. What do I mean with platformization? This essentially means that kind of platforms emerge that make a service comparable, accessible, and simple. There is, like, if you look back in early times, there's Flight Scanner. If you look a bit more recent, there is Spotify, or there is Booking.com. And I believe in finance, we're also going to see kind of platformizations. And I think we already see players emerging. You have players out there like Finanzfluss, you know, massive influencers combining a lot of reach. You have Finanztip and others. So I believe some of these platforms are already visible on the horizon. And, you know, in a trend to platformization, in a trend to convenience, you really need to make sure that your product offering fits into the platform, because it's not a trend you can stop. You know, if you were Hilton, you wanted to stop booking.com, that's just not an option. So banks should do, you know, check what's going on, and do I fit into this new ecosystem? The same for insurance. We've seen already this massive trend with Check24, you know, doing so many contract sales. And also there, it's very important that your product fits into this platform-driven sales pipeline. And for me personally, FIDA is going to be an enabler for future platformization, but it's also be an enabler to shape products that fit into this pipeline. And in the end, you know, every player has to decide for himself, do I want to become a platform myself? Do I want to lead this trend? Or if this is not an option, then I should hop onto this trend and make sure my ecosystem integrates very, very well. And so, yeah, of course, that is a risk to certain players. Yeah, if you miss the trend, you're probably in trouble. But on the other hand, if you do it very well, it's a massive chance to boost sales. It's also a massive chance to get better customer data, better customer profiles, really to build products that fit your customers. And so, yeah, I think if you embrace it and do it well, there's massive sales opportunity here.
Okay, thanks, Wolfram. Financial institutions definitely appear to have, despite their concerns, a very clear incentive to participate in this new open finance ecosystem and basically to create a competitive advantage actually out of this if they hop on this train early enough, right?
Yes, exactly.
But now, looking at the opposite side of the spectrum, right? So where do you see an added value for consumers? So not only retail consumers, but I mean all customers whose financial data are going to be in scope of the FIDA regulation. Can you mention some practical example that would illustrate this for our listeners?
Yeah, there's quite a few practical examples. I mean, One very simple example is, you know, we're all saving money. You have this huge trend towards ETF savings plans. And we don't do this for fun, but we do this because we want to retire and we want to retire wealthy. So one practical example is, you know, you can just give back confidence that you reach your goal. And if you look at recent politics, you know, a lot of things are going on. So with FIDA, everybody can have his own advisor in his pocket, and this AI-based advisor can tell him, you know, when to react, how to react to political circumstances, and how to keep your bells on track. And the other example is, you know, transparency. I mean, one example, my father just passed away, and we reviewed his contract portfolios, and we found some contracts where say, wow, you know, conditions are really, really bad. We should cancel that and replace it. So that means that transparency means in the end better service and lower prices for end consumers. And you know that products that really are not very well or that don't perform very well, they will be increasingly forced to leave the market. And I think this is a very good trend for consumers that they get better products at a better price.
Yeah, most definitely. Thank you, Wolfram. So now, in terms of some latest legal developments, FIDA is still in the EU legislative making process, finding its way through the so-called trilogue discussions and negotiations taking place between the EU lawmakers that have continued after the delay caused by the EU election last year. We see nonetheless now that the proposal has been experiencing some difficulties lately. First, beginning of February this year, there was a misinformation in the press claiming that the EU Commission has decided to take a U-turn on the proposal as part of its broader agenda to cut the red tape and to simplify the regulatory framework in the EU. From the Commission's action plan that was published shortly thereafter, it was clear, however, that FIDA has remained intact on the Commission's to-do list. So pretty much the enthusiasm among the industry criticism has vanished quite quickly. The proposal has, however, experienced some significant industry pushback, with some stakeholders claiming that it will only create new bureaucracy without bringing any tangible benefits for customers. Also, the cost of implementation that we briefly discussed would also, according to these critical voices, require substantial investments in IT infrastructure, data interfaces, and security measures. And many of them claim to believe that these funds may well be invested better in some more crucial digital transformation projects that they are anyhow required to implement, like, for instance, projects in the digital operational resilience space or AI-driven initiatives and so on and so on. Another area of concern for incumbent financial institutions, especially some established, a bit more old-fashioned players, was a potential entry of big tech in financial sector. Some went even as far as calling the entire proposal as a Trojan horse for big tech ambitions in the EU financial sector. Against this backdrop, on 16th of May this year, the Commission has disclosed to the EU lawmakers a non-paper which outlines several steps that Commission is envisaging to take for the sake of simplification of the FIDA proposal. First, the framework could solely apply to financial data of natural persons and SMEs. Effectively, this would exclude around 51,000 of large corporations from the scope. The rationale behind this proposal is that these large corporations are not expected to benefit from the framework in the same way as natural persons and SMEs would. Second, the Commission is looking to remove credit rating agencies and reinsurance undertakings from the list of addressees, so the data holders and data users, by claiming that these two types of addressees don't have a huge interaction with natural persons and SMEs and thereby do not have a vast amount of data that could be leveraged within the open finance ecosystem. Third, the Commission is also looking to introduce an optional time bar for data by allowing financial data sharing schemes to opt to exclude data collected more than 10 years ago, and also to basically take out of scope the contracts that have been terminated. So data stemming from the contracts have been terminated. It is also very important to mention that the Commission has also reiterated the Parliament's position on the so-called gatekeepers, so big, mostly US-based tech companies that are designated as gatekeepers under the Digital Markets Act, that will be excluded from the scope of FIDA, effectively being prohibited from even applying for a FISP license. there are also some specific requirements on subsidiaries of gatekeepers and entities that belong to the same group as gatekeepers that will be subject to a bit more strict application procedure if they decide to become FISP, and also in the case that they're acting as a data user. So for instance, a payment institution based in the EU that is owned or that belongs to the same group as a big tech company that is designated as a gatekeeper. These are some pretty much welcome news for at least those industry stakeholders that were bringing some heavy criticism of the proposal lately. On the other hand, the Commission is also conscious of the fact that some potential FISPs, prospective FISP applicants, may not need to comply with all rules that FIDA is bringing, and basically need to resubmit all the documentation that they have been submitting priorly, so before when they've been obtaining their existing licenses. Primarily here we are speaking about the open banking player, one category, which are account information service providers like Wealth API that were anyhow required to comply with some similar requirements when they've been obtaining their license under PSD2. So the Commission is looking to simplify the authorization regime for them, basically by allowing NCAs to rely on information to the extent possible, rely on the information and documentation disclosed to them in the original authorization procedure under the PSD2. So, Wolfram, despite the fact that this is just a non-paper, right? So it's not a legal proposal, and we are yet to see what and whether any tangible impact this will have on trilogue discussions. What's your take on this? Do you believe that this will slightly or significantly influence the FIDA proposal, and whether FIDA will still be able to serve its purpose and achieve its goals in a potentially significantly amended form?
I mean, yes, I hope that, you know, I think it's the right mindset. So we should look where we can simplify things. And, normally if you do something big like that, I think a good approach is to first look where we can we create most of the value and which audiences will benefit the most. And I think it's very rational to say, okay, you know, consumers probably gonna benefit the most. And if you have a large company, which anyway got maybe the data via SAP integration, well, okay, exclude them. That's fine with me. So from let's say thought direction or strategic direction, I think that's what we need. I also understood that this has been largely driven by, you know, the initiatives to deregulate in the US. And in the end, you know, what we want to have a competitive European ecosystem. I mean, we have all this discussion about keeping gatekeepers out. I mean, for a time, that's a possible solution. If big tech wants to get in there, they have so much money that they will get in there the one way or the other. But that means we need to be able to build up a real competitive European ecosystem so that we can keep out big tech just because we are better than them, that we don't have to keep them out by, you know, essentially telling them that they can't have a seat on the table. And I think one big lever we have is really cutting down on regulation, making things simpler. I mean, if you look back at PSD2, right, we had in Germany, we had FinTS, and the standard worked for like 30 years. It worked stable, it worked convenient, and it was actually, from my perspective, much better than PSD2. And then we regulated it. And since we have PSD2, customer satisfaction is much lower than it has ever been for the national FinTS standard. And so, yes, this non-paper is definitely a step in the right direction from our perspective.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Wolfram. So I would like to thank you for this very, very interesting conversation. It was really a pleasure speaking to you about this topic that keeps the industry busy. We'll continue to follow the trilogue process closely over the coming period and continue assessing the impact of the proposal on our clients and preparing them for the new regime. If you are interested in the topic, please feel free to take a look at our most recent publication that analyzes in more detail the latest developments around the FIDO regulation, including the Commission's non-paper and potential simplification proposals. Thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, feel free to subscribe to our channel and to stay up to date with our forthcoming episodes that will continue to explore latest legal and regulatory developments, trends, and hot topics in the fintech sector from across the globe.